This is Chapter 9, Discipline. Often, when we talk about discipline, we think of the unruly child. We are talking about the kid that is up out of his seat, talking out of turn, who is a distraction. Teachers want to know what are the management strategies that we have to modify this child's behavior. I think that the school that determines it is going to attack this behavior problem in the school and it is going to make a frontal attack in that area is going to find it is creating more problems, like putting out a series of wildfires. Once you get one out, another one starts. I think the way to really approach this is to realize there are several areas of discipline. The behavioral one is only one of them. If you are working on the other three that we have identified here, the fourth one, which seems to be the most obvious, it is the most presenting problem which a teacher or an observer would run into. Those almost melt away, though you are always working on behavior problems. First, I would like to talk about the discipline of manners. We don't live in a society that practices good manners. As a rule, kids are quite rude. To say please and thank you is something they have been taught, but somehow they haven't learned. They need to learn it again. They need to be in a classroom situation where taking turns without interrupting and those kinds of things are stressed, and the child is reminded of it again and again until it literally becomes a habit of behavior. In fact, good manners are nothing more than making your presence valued. The kid that is a nuisance is the kid that you want gone. His friends don't appreciate him. The very fact that he is ignored and people are pushing him away makes him more and more of a nuisance because none of us wants to be ignored. None of us wants to be insignificant. None of us wants to have no part and no significance in the life of another person. So these kids who are always misbehaving are those often who are being pushed away as a reaction to their behavior. That is the reason why these children who are taught manners become a valued member of their little classroom community. And they start to be appreciated because they learn to respect one another, and they learn to show interest in another person. They learn to be a good conversationalist and reach out beyond themselves, which is all part of good manners. Developing biblical values, this is right behavior, this is wrong behavior. The Bible makes it clear to develop a value system for those children that is biblical. Then we find that their behavior starts to become exemplary. Poor discipline does truly damage relationships. As we said, here is a kid who has no friends. He doesn't know why he can't get a friend. He doesn't know that all of his poor behavior that makes him obnoxious is an attempt to gain friends, to gain recognition by his peers. And yet it is all counterproductive. He needs to be sat down and shown a strategy that is the opposite of what he wants to do. Once he develops some good manners, once he develops some good personal relationship skills, then all of a sudden he can be a friend and have a friend. So we need to take the time to teach children the discipline of good manners, because it is in their own best interest. That is when they become worth so much more to the little community that they are a part of, and their peers seek them out because they are so friendly. Many teachers are sort of upset that they have the job of training these children. Why don't parents do their job? Why don't they send us perfect little children? It would be so much easier to teach these children. And yet, our philosophy in our manual states very clearly that we join hands with parents. The parent is delivering the child to the school, acknowledging the job isn't over yet. I am asking you to help in this process. I am sorry I can't deliver to you a finished child. Can you help me finish my child in the training and so many of these areas? So I think teachers should expect that they would really act in the parent's behalf, as it is called in law, terms in loco parentis, and they become the parent, and they are not put out over the fact that they have to do a lot of non-academic stuff with the kid. They have to literally train the kid as you would if he were your own child. Yet we need to look forward with joy because it is so productive. It is so worthwhile to build that kind of character into a child that is going to last him all of his life. And people are going to respect him and appreciate him if he can develop those fine skills of personal relationships. Then, of course, there is the discipline of academics. If you want to bring discipline into your school, then something has to be going on to engage the child's attention and to absorb his energy. A lot of times, the behavior problems we have in the classroom are because there is nothing going on in the classroom, nothing going on academically challenging his mind. These kids are active, they are growing, and you have got to engage them. So, academics are called a discipline. We need to see them as the discipline of the mind. It is bringing the mental abilities of this child into focus, teaching him how to concentrate. This takes a great effort. Children don't normally do this in our society. We tend to be mentally lazy. We don't look for puzzles. We don't look for things that are hard to figure out. There are not many things lying around on the living room table or in the den or bedroom that really challenge his mental ability. He is allowed to relax, to think of leisure activities that don't engage him mentally. So we really have children that are quite mentally lazy. So academics, besides the subject matter, which is important, is an opportunity to produce discipline in the mind of the child. The fact that we do have a will that controls not only what we think, but how we manipulate those thoughts, those ideas, so that we come to productive conclusions, we learn how to problem solve. We learn how to approach a certain assignment and organize it in our mind, and figure out how we are going to do the assignment in such a way that will please the teacher. Besides the discipline of the mind, which is an important discipline, and once a child has a disciplined mind, do you see how the behavior, the activity of the child is going to come into discipline too? Because our actions are an outgrowth of what is going on in our mind. The Bible says, "As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he." So we can start with the inside of a person, with where he is thinking. We are going to start to engage him in his effort, his activity, in something that is productive and fulfills the purpose for his educational career, rather than just let him be free to misbehave because he is bored and there is nothing else to do. One of the hardest disciplines that a child ever does in school is to listen. You tell a child that, and of course he is not convinced because he is thinking mathematics or something else is hard. But actually listening is a very high level skill because the words that somebody else speaks only have meaning to you as you make mental associations in your own vocabulary. If I spoke to you in a foreign language, all those sounds coming out of my mouth are totally strange to you. They would be meaningless. I couldn't engage you in a meaningful dialogue. There would be no communication going on. So you have to be able to take these sound patterns coming out of my mouth, and you have to be able to relate them in your own mind with your own experience that you know, your own personal definition of the word. You have to follow the train of thinking of the speaker. There is a sense where listening is a very disciplined skill because for a moment, anyway, you are surrendering your mind to another's. You are allowing someone else to take the lead and control your thought. As soon as you stop allowing him to do that, you stop listening. You are independently operating and the speaker is continuing and you are not listening. So it is a very difficult discipline to listen. And listening skills in America are at an all-time low because we actually train ourselves through television and so many other forms of entertainment where there is no accountability to what we listen to. We think we are listening, but we are not. And along that line, I think another discipline that I like to see in my classroom, and I ask my teachers to make sure that there is a quiet period in every classroom every day. By that I mean an absolute quiet with no distractors for a child from preschool through a senior in high school. They will have a period of time, and of course it will be much shorter for the preschool child. It might be only 10 or 15 minutes. But for the high school students it might be an entire period. And this will be quiet. There will be no distractions. There is something wonderful about silence. There is the ability to not have to deal with external stimuli and to focus on just the assignment, the book, whatever the subject matter is at hand, and bring all of your powers to bear on that subject. Also, silence is wonderful for reflection and for thinking without extraneous input and even allowing the Spirit of God to move in and control the thought processes of a mind. I think if we really want our children to learn, to hear, and to listen to God, Part of that is going to be to learn to think in silence. And as they contemplate either the Word of God or whatever it is they are thinking about, their relationship with the Lord, God is going to be able to step in a lot easier if he is not combating outside input, noises, music, a soundtrack, whatever. It is competing for our attention. Knowing human nature, we tend to give in to that. Silence is just a real discipline for real personal growth. I think it is really important to use quizzes and drills to increase speed and accuracy in thinking. I think that is a marvelous mental discipline. Not only are we lazy in our mental processes, but if we are allowed to, we think very slowly. We don't learn how to hurry up. The reason a runner disciplines the body for the race is so that they can run faster, a weightlifter to lift more weights, a wrestler to wrestle more powerfully. Well, what are we trying to do in the mental process? To not only struggle with more abstract and difficult concepts, but that we could do it more rapidly so that our mind actually becomes a servant of ours. It is literally a computer. It is a tool that we can use more efficiently. And if we discipline our minds, we will find people will come to us and ask questions, and we will have the answer. And why is that happening? Because we have been willing to be disciplined in our mind, and we can think quickly. That is a great advantage as we go through life. Every employer and every job will benefit if you are a quicker and more accurate thinker. There is a wonderful discipline in engaging each other in the whole arena of ideas. That is a discipline because I think naturally we want to do it physically. Naturally, a child wants to interact on a more concrete level than abstract, because abstract is such a mental discipline, and you have to be able to grab with your mind and surround with your mind words and their definitions and their innuendos. And as you are debating or discussing the fine points of an issue, and this can happen even at very early grades, it is important for them to realize that you can do absolutely marvelous things and come up with amazing conclusions and have this sense of real satisfaction from purely a mental process. See, a young child thinks the only way you can be really satisfied is to eat a dish of ice cream and cake, because that physical satisfaction is something he is very familiar with, being hungry, then eating, and being full. He likes that kind of satisfaction. We have to teach the child that a disciplined mind can bring something totally new into his experience, and that is mental satisfaction. To be pleased with a mental accomplishment, to understand or dialogue or to argue maybe successfully some mental concept or idea, that is a discipline, but it is very expanding. That is part of what education is all about. That brings real discipline into the child's life. The last academic discipline I would like to mention is just striving for excellence. I am told that in the Middle Ages, master craftsmen used to sign, used to have a mark they would put on their work, whether he was a furniture maker or a potter or whatever. He would either sign it or have some kind of an insignia on it that showed he was the maker. He was proud of it. And he built a reputation on his workmanship. We are losing that very fast. In America today, a lot of people that work hope people never find out who did it, because they are not proud of it. They just want their paycheck. They are just putting in their time. What we want to do is to bring a discipline onto the paper for a child, that we can write in a disciplined way. Our penmanship can be disciplined. Our spelling can be disciplined. To indent a paragraph where we should is a discipline. To have a margin, to be neat, to put the title where it belongs, to have the date where it belongs, to have all of those things. There are a lot of teachers that really don't emphasize that. They say, well, the child is young. It doesn't really matter. It is the content. It is the right answer on the page that really matters. No. Excellence matters. Discipline matters. Reaching for the stars matters, because we are learning life lessons here, life skills. The fact that 4 plus 4 equals 8 and that appears on the page does not make an A paper. He has got that part right, But there is more to life than adding two numbers together. It is a discipline. It is a mental, academic discipline. And if we fail to do that, then the child will see that discipline does not matter. And if it doesn't matter, that is why he speaks without raising his hand. That is why the teacher has this problem with Johnny, because the whole way that academics have been established in the classroom is in a very undisciplined way. So discipline has not been brought in academically so that it leaks over into the behavior area. That is why the teacher finds himself contending with when he could solve many of his problems if he brought discipline into the assignments and into the academics. Then I think we have touched a little bit in prior chapters on the discipline in athletics, but this is another area that children need to be challenged in. Basically, to interact in some kind of an athletic activity where they are physically challenged and they can put their entire effort and energy into a process. To play soccer and to run as hard and as fast as they can until they are so exhausted that they say, "Coach, I have to come out and rest." It is a wonderful experience for a child to reach the end of their ability and then watch that end ability be extended as they train, as they discipline themselves. To experience the pain of exhaustion, having spent yourself, having run as hard and as fast as you can, and then to see that extended as you keep pushing against that pain threshold and watch personal growth take place. It is a wonderful experience. And then, of course, the whole competition aspect of athletics in which a child is taught to handle emotional overload such as frustration, anger, pride, failure, revenge, anxiety, before a competition. These are all fierce, passionate emotions that sweep over a child. He has to be taught that there is a proper way to respond and to handle all of these emotions. Christ teaches us how we are to live life under these kinds of stressful conditions, and a child can be taught that. Sometimes the lesson he learns out on a soccer field is more important than the lesson he is going to learn in the classroom, because it is a lifelong lesson that is going to teach him to rein in his emotions and his passions and help him to be a temperate person. Teaching sportsmanship, that you care about your opponents, you care about your teammates, and you realize that the love relationships that are established, even in a wrestling match, convey not hatred, not bitterness, not anger, but a fair display of skill and strength. It is just approaching it from a different angle, and love is the most powerful motivator in any competitive event. And of course, it is always displayed by good sportsmanship. So it is not whether you win or lose, but how the game was played. You have heard that phrase so often, but sportsmanship is at the heart of it, because that is where life lessons are being learned. The Christian coach has a marvelous window of opportunity into the hearts and lives of these young people, because he or she is able to teach these life lessons to these children, which will stand them for the rest of their life. Many of these children will not remember any of their teachers, but few of them will forget a coach, because it was the coach that stood by them when they lost the game and they cried or whatever that emotional issue was, and brought them through that and taught them how to stand up under those kind of pressures. So a coach, a Christian coach particularly, has a wonderful opportunity to influence a young person, and of course, to bring discipline into their life. So finally we get to the discipline of behavior, which, like I said, can eclipse all the discipline problems of a school. But if we are taking care of the discipline of manners, the discipline of academics, and the discipline of athletics, if we are somehow weaving that into the life of our entire school, then we have an engaged child. He is engaged in all of these activities. He is busy. He has learned how to rein in his passion, how to focus his passion. He has learned how to control his emotions. And so the discipline that a teacher wants to see in the classroom is going to follow. It is not that which is going to be a problem. For some children, it will be a problem. But the point of the matter is, if these other things are happening, they will be much less of a problem. All behavior, all actions, as we have said before, come from inside. The Bible tells us we act out what we are thinking. In fact, many times, the only way you can tell what a child is really thinking is to observe him and to watch his behavior. So consequently, we use a behavior and attitude grade on our weekly report card. The behavior is the overt expression of what is going on in the child's life. The attitude is the covert, or what is inside. And yet that is fairly easy to discern in most children. And the reason for giving a grade to a child in that area is pointing out to the fact that what is going on inside is not only observable, and it was observed by the teacher, and that is how it got graded, but it is subject to the child's will. It is something the child can do something about. Our attitude isn't out of control. Our attitude is a choice that we make. We choose to be happy. We choose to be angry. Sometimes we have feelings of sadness. If we get some alarming bad news, the sadness overwhelms us. But that is not attitude. Attitude is different. Attitude is basically an approach to authority. Attitude is how I am going to submit in areas of relationship. So consequently, that is a choice. Once a child understands that attitude is a function of their will, they do learn to work on that area. They focus on that area. They realize that behavior grade will often follow that attitude grade. As the attitude grade improves, as a child learns to willingly submit to authority, comes to truly believe that the teacher and administration of the school is on his side, not opposed to him, truly loves him, wants to encourage him, then the child does not see conflict going on, but a supportive relationship where he can cooperate, develop an attitude that will make his behavior then follow and become what he wants it to be. The discipline that we bring into that is that when 3 weeks in a row go by and the behavior or the attitude are below the sea level, the average level, then the child is on probation. I suppose all schools have some policy of probation, but the parents are notified. The weekly report cards will say probation. The child cannot participate in sports, and he is under constant review to make sure this discrepancy is made up. So that becomes a discipline of itself. Just a weekly report card that then becomes a dialogue between the home, the school, as to the improvement seen in this area of behavior and attitude. So it becomes a tool in the area of discipline. My observation over the years is that most discipline problems that children face today are because somewhere in their past the parents prevented natural consequences from happening to their children, and they were rescued again and again, or the thing that should have happened didn't happen. The parent made a threat, didn't make good on the threat, so the child has lived in this sea that is awash with, there is no cause and effect. One of the best teaching devices in the whole universe that God built into it from the very beginning is cause and effect. For every choice, there is a consequence. When we as parents or even teachers intervene in that process, then the child is bewildered. They don't know what is the natural consequence. There is a great discipline built into this whole physical world. In fact, God has made it possible for us to learn many of the lessons of life the hard way. Now he says, "My son, I want you to be wise, and I would rather you would learn it from listening and choosing to obey. But there are other ways of learning this lesson too. You fall down, you scrape your knee, it bleeds, it hurts. Maybe there is a little bit of infection. But the fact of the matter, there is a consequence for our misbehavior, for our poor judgment, and usually it is painful. But we can learn that way too." Now, when a child is denied experiencing the consequence, he does not even get to learn the way that God designed through nature or through the cause and effect relationship that God designed for him to learn. So we have a very confused child. He sees a lot of inconsistency on the part of the adults or the parents in his life because sometimes he gets the consequence and sometimes he doesn't. Sometimes the threat is made good and sometimes it is just hanging there over his head. And we have a real serious discipline problem in the life of a child. So just to wrap up that thought, I would say that our failure to allow consequences to have the teaching effect that it should have in the life of a child prolongs his immaturity, prolongs his period of learning, prolongs the amount of pain that he is going to experience, and often passes off the responsibility of training the child in that area to another who will allow the child to experience it and will allow the child to learn the lesson. There are a lot of times when the parent's child is not appreciated as they are handed to the Sunday school teacher because they know the parent can't control their own kids. Basically, what that parent is doing is handing over that responsibility for a teacher to do what the parent didn't take the time to do. We do have a corporal punishment policy in our school, and it is certainly under the area of the discipline of behavior. It is not a very popular subject in America today. In fact, it is quite taboo. Probably many Christian schools have dropped the corporal punishment policy just because of the present attitude of society about that, and maybe even state law. In the state of Alaska, corporal punishment is not allowed in the public schools. Private schools may only have it if they have a very well-defined policy in writing, filed with the Department of Education in Juneau. We have done that just so we could retain the biblical principle of applying the rod. There are many scriptures, and quite frankly, I haven't heard a sermon on this in years and years. And I think it is because we truly fear the pressure that society has brought upon us. Proverbs 13:24 says, "He that spareth the rod hateth his son." That sounds like very strong language. We would feel justified in saying, "Now don't tell me that because I don't spank my son, I hate him." Well, I won't tell you that, but Proverbs 13:24 says that, and we are going to have to come to grips with that ourselves. Now, of course, there comes an age in a child's life where that will be no longer appropriate. But if we start earlier enough, and if we apply this kind of corporal punishment, discipline, in faith, believing that God is going to fulfill what He promises, that if you train up a child in the way he should go, and this is part of that scriptural process, we have to believe that God is going to honor my obedience. And of course, corporal punishment isn't punishing in my anger, my wrath, me out of control. It has to be a very difficult decision I make to inflict pain on a child in order to bring conformity, in order to bring obedience. There is an amazing verse in Proverbs 22:15 which says, "Foolishness is bound in the heart of the child, and the rod will drive it far from him." Now I know through experience how true that is, and I know that a child caught in foolishness and disciplined properly, firmly and yet in love, can bring an end to a whole series of foolish behavior before much more serious consequences take place. Proverbs 23:13-14 also reminds us to use the rod, and also many other passages in Scripture. And as I said before, it is not a popular subject in the world today. We are paying quite a heavy price in society for turning our back on what was considered good child rearing years ago. Let me say once again, there is no excuse for abuse in this area. A father who is an alcoholic or on drugs or somehow is out of control is in no position to implement this kind of discipline on a child. It has to be done in love. That is the only way that it will work. As a school, we use it very sparingly. I have gone through years where I have never spanked a child. But of course, children know whether or not that is your policy and whether or not the school retains the right to do that. That does bring a level of discipline into the school, knowing that you have not surrendered that right. Often, that is all it takes. Basically, I believe that spankings belong at home. They don't belong at school. And I don't think you should spank for chronic problems at school if a child is never doing their homework or has a behavior pattern that you are trying to correct. That is a job to be done at home by the parents. Spanking at school is only for serious infractions that happen right there at school and that need to truly impress on the child that kind of behavior will not be tolerated. He cannot run up to his friend and punch him in the nose and give him a bloody nose or something like physically assault somebody else and somehow just be scolded or told never to do that again, especially when you find that those kinds of disciplines have no effect on the child. He is going to have to be brought up short. Corporal punishment is something that you do under well-spelled-out guidelines. Do it very fairly, and needs to always be done in the best interests of the child. You need to be looking into the child's future and what you are developing, and if it is ever going to be counterproductive, of course it should not be done. And there are cases where it would be. I would say my overall guideline in discipline is go for the heart of the child. Make sure the child knows that his behavior, even though it is important, is not as important as his heart. And when you talk to this child, you must convey that he matters to you, that you love him, and that you don't love him any less, and he is not worth any bit less because he has misbehaved. In other words, his behavior can never change his status or his value, and if you ever make it so, you will fail him miserably. And of course, play into Satan's hand so that the child never does experience the kind of forgiveness that God wants him to experience as he comes to the cross of Christ and realizes that God so loved the world that he gave his son for that child. And Christ died for the very boy that you are disciplining. So consequently, he has to be treated with absolute respect. I have found that one-on-one conversation, particularly with the older child, but I would say from the fourth grade on up, I will find that when you can sit down and share with a child where his behavior is taking him, and let him know through this whole conversation that you love him, if you can convey love, that you are interested in his heart, you want him to respond with his whole heart, that you want him to be a caring and loving person, you demonstrate that you are a caring and loving person. I can only think of maybe one or two times in the 35 years I have been in education where I came out of a disciplinary confrontation with a child that I didn't feel was very beneficial. Because children cry for attention. They cry out to be affirmed. And if you can do that, I don't care what has been going on in the life of that child. If you can affirm and validate their frustrations, their fears, or whatever it is that they are acting out, if you can let them know that they are a worthy person, a wonderful person, to be in your school, you are glad that they are there. If you can shower them and drown them in love, that child will respond so positively and will walk out of there, and the next time they see you in the hall, they will want to catch your eye and to let you know that you did listen, and you notice that their behavior is better. Every action they do lets you know that one-on-one time when you touch them with loving words mattered to them, and they are going to show you by their good behavior that they want to live in your favor. They want you to be pleased with the response that you see in them. It just works wonders. I think without love, we are not going to be able to discipline our children properly at all. I think a lot of times we say that we love our children, but everything we do to them, every expression of our face, every tone of our voice is saying the opposite thing. The child hears your words, but he walks out of the office feeling rejected, feeling unloved, feeling unappreciated, feeling like he was not understood, feeling like he did not get a hearing. And if he leaves the office like that, there was no discipline happening. It was counterproductive. How many children walk out of the school office feeling just that way? And it is wrong. We can't afford to do that. Christian discipline is not taking place unless there has been reconciliation, restoration, affirmation, hope, so the child can see that there is a future for him. He can do better. He will choose to do better. And he is in an environment that is going to support him and encourage him to do better. That is when we are going to see life change. Love is the only substance in all the universe that has the power to change a life. Nothing wise, not rules, not the rod, nothing else. Only love. And that is why the rod, without love, is totally ineffective. Let's talk about the situation where a student is allowed to choose the punishment, to spank or not to spank. Even though I think a spanking would dispatch the whole incident much more quickly and be done with it, it would be behind both the student and me. I still value that student's choice, even to the extent that sometimes we allow them to make the wrong choice. So sometimes I do give the student a 3-day suspension, or 3 swats, because I feel that 3 swats are scriptural. I think they are effective, and children that make that hard choice because it is painful, It is going to be 3 hard swats, and then it is going to be over. They think about that. Usually I give them time to think about that. But a very important lesson is being built into the life of the child and his making a choice over that. In fact, I have had a child who has come to school and for a certain infraction was given that same choice, to be suspended for 3 days or 3 swats. He and his friend sitting there in the office. His friend took the swats. He took the suspension because, in his own words, nobody was going to spank him. Well, the friend got the 3 swats. He stayed in school, didn't get behind on any work. Nothing more was said. There was no public humiliation. He was treated with respect and love. He was totally reinstated into the community of the student body and felt accepted. He went out on recess and interacted with his peers. His friend was gone for 3 days, got behind, came back, had to explain his absence, and about a week later, because he had not learned his lesson, made the same infraction, and was left with the same dilemma. Was he going to take 3 swats or the suspension? Without thinking, without hesitating, he says, "I'll take the 3 swats." I asked why. He said, "I saw how quickly B got over it, and I realized I hadn't learned a lesson. I was just avoiding the consequence." And he had the 3 swats, and that was the end of it. It was all over. And I think it was a sense of really, truly submitting to the authority of the school, to my authority as the principal. What they say when they choose voluntarily to take the swats, they are saying, "You are right. I was wrong. I will accept my punishment, and it will be history." If it is done in love and respect, there will be no humiliation, and the child realizes he has learned his lesson, and he doesn't want that repeated. So it is a marvelous technique for bringing respectful discipline into a school. I want to take just a moment to say that I do not let all children choose their punishment. I don't let first, second, and third graders have the choice, because I know God makes it very clear to me that the child isn't really old enough to make the right choice. Since I know the choice he should make is to get the swats, I make the choice for him. It just saves him from wrestling with that dilemma. Now, once he gets in junior high, it is a slightly different matter, because even though I know the choice the child should make, he is old enough to bring his own will under submission. He knows all about consequences, so if he would rather suffer through the consequences of a 3-day suspension, then it is up to him to see if that is really what he wants to do. Up through junior high, a spanking is appropriate. After that, it is only appropriate if they choose it. And I have spanked 18, 19-year-old seniors, and they were still my best friend and never did lose their friendship over it, because it was their choice. And they realized that it was a pretty serious matter that we were talking about. It was pretty embarrassing. They wanted it dealt with in a pretty severe but quick way. And it was a good choice because it did settle the issue, and in a sense it did deliver that child from what could have been much more serious consequences and much more serious behavior pattern problems. So it can be a very healthy thing in the life of a school if done in a healthy fashion with love.